You know, I remember as a law enforcement professional of many years, I remember living and breathing law enforcement. The only thing I really cared about was my fellow officers, of course, my family and friends, but fellow officers, the law enforcement profession. But the older I grew, and definitely as I went through treatment, my own treatment, I realized that all first responders, if they are suffering, are pretty much suffering from the same thing. Suicidal ideation, depression, isolation, addiction issues. I love getting different perspectives on health and wellness from other members and professionals from the first responder community. My next guest is Jason Smith. Jason is a firefighter paramedic who rose through the ranks as an acting driver, lieutenant, captain, battalion chief, and even assistant district fire chief. He is now the president of the IAFF Local 4321 for Broward County, Florida. In this interview, Jason gives his perspective, the firefighter perspective, on mental health and wellness from his perspective, as well as talking about resources available for our brave men and women who serve in the firefighting profession. Jason Smith, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. CJ Evolution Podcast. Patrick here, host and creator of the Top Rank CJ Evolution. Top Rank because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much. If you would take a moment and give us that rating and review, that five-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, we sure would appreciate it. And share this and other episodes with your family and friends. I want to take a moment again and give a big shout out and thank you to you, yes, you, the criminal justice professional. Maybe you're a paramedic, maybe you're a dispatcher, maybe you're working in the fire services or law enforcement. Thank you for what you do. Very difficult times now, folks. You know that. But I, along with others, appreciate your service. Remember this, don't buy into all the crap on the media. The vast majority of people support you. You are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Keep up the fantastic work and come home safe to your family and friends. First responders see things on a daily basis that a vast majority of people in the population will never see. That requires unique treatment and therapy for our brave men and women who serve. Not that we're better than the regular population, is this, again, we see things on a daily basis that most people don't. Most people have a handful of traumatic events that happen to them in their lifetime. And that is horrible. I'm not trying to discount that. First responders see that every day. The folks, the clinicians, the counselors at Shatterproof understand this. That's why if you are suffering, if you are going through that period right now in your life, please reach out to Shatterproof. The link is in the show notes, or you can reach out to me directly. This is the only program of its kind in the country. FHE and Shatterproof has been around for a long time. The premier treatment facility for first responders in the country. Please be safe, and if you're suffering, please reach out. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have my next guest on the show, Jason Smith. He's the president of the IAFF Local 4321. Broward Firefighters, thank you for joining me today, sir, and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you, sir. We were just talking about Florida for the listener, and I'm in Arizona, and Jason's in Florida. And what did you say, Jason? You can't shovel?
Yeah, you can't shovel sunshine, can you? You know, there's snow here. Maybe once, if you look, maybe in that flickered a little bit of snow in North Florida, but yeah, it's always sunshiny here. I guess that's why everyone's coming to Florida here lately, it seems.
Yeah, I know. I was down here a couple of weeks ago, and it was funny. I mean, did you grow up in Florida?
I am. They call me a true Floridian.
Oh, yeah, because I was down there for a week, and everybody I met was not from Florida. You know, they're from New York or Jersey or something.
Right. We're a good melting pot. We get it. We get the best of everywhere.
Yeah. And I love Florida. Great state, and I like the vibe down there. But I'm glad you're here today, Jason, because, you know, I want to talk about, first of all, I if you wouldn't mind, sir, I'd like you to tell the listener a little bit about your background. Okay. And then we can get into the meat and potatoes of what we were going to talk about. Go ahead, sir.
Absolutely. So a little bit of my background is it was focused in fire rescue. So I started and went put myself through school like everyone does in that industry. And we finished off with a certificate called firefighter and another one called paramedic here. You got to be dual certified. Sometimes in the northern states, New York, Chicago, you don't necessarily have to be cross-trained, but it's a big deal here in the state of Florida. And so I started my career in about 2001 professionally. And so now I work for an organization called Broward Share Fire Rescue. I'm a battalion chief with them. And about 3 years ago, I've been on and off in the executive board for the union, but I was nominated and became their union president. And that's a 3-year stint. So in that I've done some neat things, some of which were the first, right? Like the pandemic. I had to walk through what the pandemic looks like for about 740 to 750, depending on retirement and hiring. Active men and women, about 186 retirees is basically my portfolio of oversight.
Oh, wow.
So that's what I, that's sort of a little bit of background professionally what I have.
Well, and thank you for your service, sir. You know, we were talking a little bit before we started, you know, first responder, firefighters, law enforcement, you know, they all pretty much see the same stuff. But we're in a, I don't know if crisis is the right word, Jason, you may correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, but a lot of our first responders, obviously fire, are suffering, right? I mean, they're suffering in this time we're living in. You mentioned COVID. And, you know, they're just suffering with all kinds of issues, mental health issues, addiction issues. Am I wrong? Because I just see the law enforcement side, or, you know, I'm used to the law enforcement side, but firefighters, they're struggling too.
100%. You nailed it. I was looking at a report and we tried to generate the most recent, but just to give you an idea, in 2017, there was a report that said about 103 firefighters and roughly about 93 police officers had committed suicide.
Yeah.
And the line of duty death is usually when we put our lives on the line to save someone else. That was only 93 for firefighters. So we surpassed through some form of mental behavioral mental health issues. We suffered more causes of self expiration then and putting our line ourselves on the line for the men and women in society and residents that we protect. So there's definitely some problems here.
Yeah. What do you think some of the ways, because I know in law enforcement, and again, I'm assuming, even though I don't like to assume, that that firefighters struggle with coming forward. Like that's a big thing with law enforcement, as you probably know, sir. I mean, it's a fear thing. I know it was for me. You know, you don't want to be judged. You don't want to be, oh, that guy, that you're, you know, nobody's going to back you up. How can we change that? I mean, how can we change that fear or maybe a little bit of ego to get first responders, firefighters, the help that they need? Because I think that's the biggest challenge, I think. I mean, among other challenges, but that's one of the biggest.
I would agree with you. So there's so many little things. I think you nailed it. There's an ego and there has to be, which you don't want it to be, but there has to be in the type of job that we do because we're going to do the best. We're going to provide the best. And that type of ego is with inside of the military, police and fire and EMS. So things that I know that we've been brokering that we're charting, it's actually clinically proven, which is therapy with animals. So we've really been brokering into the canine side of that and supporting that piece. Sometimes that we've recognized through peer support groups, which is a normal interaction that you do after a crisis to try to get everyone in the room, sort of go through those emotions, hopefully get ahead of them and before that they become a deterrent for your life and personal life and success. But we've been implementing canine. So maybe, you know, hopefully here in the next couple of years, we'll be able to have some a little bit more reports with success on showing that introducing therapy dogs.
Yeah.
That's a big one that I would say maybe would help. And that we're trying every effort out there that we can.
Yeah.
Anything and everything.
Yeah. I know you mentioned therapy dogs. And when I went through Shatterproof, we were talking about, and they had therapy dogs down there. That was part of their program. They would bring in therapy dogs from, I think Broward County SO and those, I mean, it's amazing how how much animals, and I'm sure it doesn't work for everybody, but touching the animals just relieves stress, you know, because they can sense, they're trained, they can sense people that are going through some stuff. Cause I remember the dog is in there and the dog would gravitate to people who were maybe depressed or, you know what I mean? I mean, they sense that, they have that innate sense to go to that person. And I think that's a wonderful idea. Now,
these animals are amazing. I agree. Yeah.
Now, what about the academy? So in the fire academy, because I'm from the law enforcement side, are they teaching young firefighters, men and women, coping skills or anything to mitigate, mental stress or distress or PTSD or anything like that?
That's a really great question. And I will tell you, on the fire side of the house, they have not necessarily brokered probably the appropriate curriculum to infuse. They've increased the amount of time. It's just a shy of 500 hours now that it takes for you to become a certified firefighter in the state of Florida. Each state has a little bit of different in reference to hours, right? But what I have seen, so the answer is no on the fire side, but what I have seen curriculum-wise on the medical side of it, once you go through EMT and paramedic, they are infusing some of that coping piece, the little bit more of social interactions and being able to not necessarily be vulnerable, but to be available to have discussions, open discussions. So some of the curriculum is starting to be infused on the medical side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so important. I mean, I, and again, speaking from the law enforcement side, I remember, you know, the academies in Colorado where I'm from is they would devote like an hour. And I understand with post requirements and all these other state requirements, they have to jam in a bunch of different topics, skills, you know, shooting and all that stuff. But I was always shocked and I was always disappointed that they only devoted an hour to that when they should be preparing, I think, the young men and women before they get out there, the firehouse or whatever department, police department, a little bit better than they have been. I mean,
I agree. Yeah. I agree with you. Think about the first call that you went on, or I can think the first call I went on. You're ready for like this wild scenario that school provides you and your in-service training provides you. And now you're essentially on your own or in charge or responding to this call. And it's a loss of someone in the family. And now you have to figure out, maybe sometimes at a young age, maybe you've never experienced someone passing in your family yet. And now you've got to figure out how to be empathetic and provide some form of care to a stranger. And there is no necessarily training for that. They don't, they haven't been able to bridge that piece. So I'm 100% on board with what you're saying. You're right.
And I think one of the, Jason, the problems that law enforcement has is I'm assuming it might be the same in fire. You tell me, it's the culture within an organization. Now, I know every organization is different, but I was fortunate to come from a department where, you know, from the top down, we had command staff, and I was part of command staff that bought into it. They don't only talk the talk, but they walk the walk, and they were pretty good at taking, you know, there are people that were in mental crisis or addiction pretty seriously. My question is the fire culture the same? Is it different in different, you know, firehouses, or is it more together than law enforcement, you know, unified? I mean, I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but it's different cultures, you know, in different organizations. We're all police department. You're all fire, but within that are different cultures. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're 100% right. So a third of our life, we live together as being firefighters. And so you tend to get to know people, you get on their nerves, you become like big brothers and sisters and that type of stuff. And so saying that, we sometimes do miss the plug. We're not plugged in appropriately. We have men and women with inside of our organizations that take their life, and you go, I didn't know how did I miss those cues? And you're right. It's a culture that has to start from the top down. Some organizations have over the years have been industry leaders in this. And with those industry leaders, not everyone jumps on the same channel or the same exact process, which sometimes I make the statement, we always hear it, why fix something that works? Don't reinvent the wheel. But in the industry, sometimes what I notice is groups like to put their own spin or their own type of swag on things. And maybe sometimes that slows or impedes the progress of maybe just taking something that was happening over in Detroit or in Wisconsin or whatever it would be. But yeah, I think it is a culture. And when you find an organization that believes in it from the top down, like you identified, I think that's when the success happens, because the organization's willing to be vulnerable and put themselves for the people to get better. This is new for a lot of individuals. And even though the topic is not new, when people go into those command staff roles and or leadership roles, you got so many things going on try to prioritize. Sometimes you put something as easy and what should be on the forefront is the men and women that work in that organization. Sometimes you're focused on the other topics and you don't hit it until there's a loss, and then you're trying to regroup.
Yeah, I've been in that position, and it's a horrible feeling. You know, it's that whatever 30,000 foot view that you have, and you know, sometimes not intentionally, but you hit it on the head, Jason. You're like, okay, I got all these different things in the fire right now. And, you know, no pun intended, but, that, and I'm not paying attention over here until, like you said, unfortunately it's after the fact, you know, but I do think, and I don't know what your opinion is, Jason, that since you and I think we're probably the same age, probably roughly. I think things are changing. I think we're inching towards improvement, at least on the law enforcement side. We're getting better and better and better. But I still think we have a long way to go.
I agree. I think there's plenty of coalitions and cohorts that have gotten together, committees that have really decided to say enough's enough, and let's go ahead and get a big think tank and start marching forward. And so I will tell you, in the last at least 10 years, roughly in that window, there has been some significant changes and implementations, without a doubt. So yes, I do think we are moving towards better success, trying to catch those indicators prior to someone doing something, you know, taking a temporary situation and making it a permanent solution. I do think that there are tons of things that are happening on the positive, but I do think there's a lot more to go, right? It's sort of reaching a string and saying, how long is that piece of string? And you just don't have an answer because you don't know how long and how deep and how far it is. So,
yeah. What's the average tenure of somebody down in Broward, you know, on the fire paramedic side? I mean, how long are they staying in, or people like, you know, is the fire side kind of like law enforcement now? Everybody's looking for a way out.
I think it really, so great question. Usually it's all derivative off of retirement. Most places, if you're going to go and be able to receive a full retirement now, if you're within a state system, you got to be roughly about the age of 60 or 30 years of service. Before, it wasn't too much less than that. It was 55 or 25 years of service, but that tends to be your normal. Anywhere between 20 and 30 years is what you have to put in to be able to gain a retirement. Based on the time you placed in. We have seen over a period of time where some people just were, and this was the early indicators, where there were people saying, you know what, this is just not for me. I've got to do something else. What I'm seeing or what I'm recognizing, or the responses that I'm going to, I just can't erase what I just saw. So certain people did go into real estate, or they went into finance or with taxes or whatever. We have seen people go ahead and say, this isn't for me anymore.
Yeah. And the one thing I've always liked about fire was, you know, there seems to be, I mean, I can't imagine somewhere like Broward County where you're probably very busy, but what I saw with my friends that were firefighters is they would run on a run, and they would come back and they would have some downtime. You know, whereas law enforcement, and I'm not trying to say one is better than the other, I'm just saying that's, you know, with law enforcement, it's that hypervigilance 24 hours a day, 24/7. Whereas fire, you know, would have a little bit of downtime until that next run. But I imagine Broward is very busy.
So we are busy, but most organizations throughout the whole country, the deal with our industry is you just don't know when the next call's coming in. Right. So your city leaders, your county leaders try to do their best with strategizing locations. So response times to the location is a minimal impact. And I think the national average ranges into no more than 5 minutes, 8 minutes. Like these parameters change all the time, but that's like your window of response time. Cause there's a lot of rural areas throughout our country where they can't just go ahead financially and or for populace put stations or response personnel everywhere, right? But saying that, and to get onto one of the statements that you made is, yeah, sometimes there is after a call, whether it's a tragic call or not. Yeah, there's a window where you may be able to come back and there's a little bit of downtime, and that downtime is between receiving a call and discussions happen. And I'm going to let you in on a little industry issue that we've done. And then I can tell you how it's created problems. Mm-hmm. It's the calls, no different than what our partners in law enforcement respond to. They can be very horrific at times. And what I've noticed is the personalities of a first responder. So I'm going to put the military group in there, the police, the fire, mm-hmm. Even maybe the hospital staff, right? We see people at their worst, and we see some of the worst tragedies at times that are out there. So the personalities of people that are in this career are different than a banker, are different than somebody that is a business owner. Sometimes there's a little bit of dark humor that comes from that group. Yeah. And what I notice is the downtime, a lot of the men and women would play practical jokes on each other. So that was a pretty well norm. And what happens is that practical joke would break the monotony of maybe that horrific event that we had just rendered care to. But what ends up transpiring is as society has changed and different requirements have played in, those antics of joking weren't always now accepted.
Yeah.
And that's taken one part of being able to break that tension. And then maybe instead of cry, you laugh. That has been sort of taken back. Yeah. And now there's not always those acceptable outlets.
Yeah.
And at one time we had 20 years ago. And I think sometimes when you bottle that in, then you go home, your significant others sometimes don't understand the job that you do unless they're in the industry. And if they are, they probably don't really want to talk about what their day was. And if you bring home and talk about what your day was, they can't relate. So where do you sort of break that monotony of that tension of what you just dealt with for a 12-hour shift, 10-hour shift, 24-hour shift? That's what I've recognized.
Yeah. And unfortunately, as you know, Jason, a lot of first responders, they turn to alcohol or other means to cope and numb. But I really like what you said. When you said that about using humor, I was going through my mind of how many times I was on a call, and not to be disrespectful, but like you said, I mean, that's a coping mechanism where you're, you know, you don't want to show emotions or anything. So you'll cut up, you know, you'll start, you know, telling jokes or whatever like that. And I never thought of it, but you're exactly right. I mean, with society changing, that's probably been taken away or mitigated to some extent where you can't. So what are first responders supposed to do? You know, because they don't want to say anything. I guess it depends on your audience and know who your audience is, but you know, you don't want to say anything that's going to offend anybody. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you're taking away that outlet to get a vent. And like I said, I think a lot of them resort to, you know, alcohol abuse or other addictive things. You know, it was amazing when I was down in Shatterproof. I mean, there was like half the first responders down there were firefighters from all over the place.
Yeah.
Chicago and everywhere else. And again, like we talked about, I mean, they're all dealing with the same stuff.
That's correct.
You know, they're all dealing with the same stuff. So what advice, Jason, would you give, you know, say I'm a young firefighter cadet, you know, a cadet, and I want to get into the fire service. I mean, what would you tell me or anybody out there, maybe our listeners out there thinking, hey, I want to be a firefighter?
I would say great choice. What a rewarding career. And a couple of things that you need to think about. You've got to think, number one, that you're going to be selfless. And I would like to paint a picture. I just saw it recently. As we know that the Ukraine and Russia war or conflict is going on, I looked at a bunch of firefighters actually in a picture. And sometimes we forget that, and as residents, as the population out there, you don't think about the men and women when a hurricane comes that you've got to dedicate yourself to that arena, whether it's a tornado, hurricane, whatever the emergency is. You've got to be willing, and your family has to understand that you are now an asset to that city, to that municipality, that county, whatever that government entity is that you're going to work for. You're now responsible. So you've got to, one, tell yourself, hey, this is going to be a rewarding career to go into, but I've got to be willing to leverage time away from my family. There's going to be times that I'm going to have sleep deprivation just because of the busyness of what you're doing and not being able to get enough sleep. And in our case, many times schedules are 24 hours on and you get the 48 hours off. And so within that 24 hour period, the next day you may be completely a zombie and or be disconnected from the family. So just go in with a realistic mindset that these jobs of police officers, and military and hospital employees and everybody that's sort of in that front line that over the years we've sort of called first responders. There's a lot of things that sometimes the community doesn't know that exists. So when you put yourself through the schooling and do everything you can, you may have a call and realize, hey, I'm good with blood, but that type of scenario I just saw, I can't handle, whether it's dealing with the young kids, and which I'm sure you've dealt with. I mean, one of the most horrific things that most of us deal with is when we respond on kids that have either been utilized in a bad environment and or, you know, a tragic vehicle accident, it tends to wear on you. Yeah. And so you got to be ready for that. You got to have a good support system as well, outside of maybe the organization that you're going to work with, maybe at home. You know, you got to think about these things because these are real.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know this, Jason, but the listener and a lot of people, they just think, okay, what the firefighters do is what I see on TV. Right. Or law enforcement is what's in the movies. Or no. That's all Hollywood. Right. It's not the real deal. They never show firefighters, you know, I mean, dealing with the aftermath of an incident or the paperwork and all this other stuff. They just want to glamorize it. And that's, I think that's the problem sometimes with you know, the society we live in. I mean, there's, you know, people just take what they see off TV and the movies and they say, oh, that's real life.
Right.
But I love what you said about being prepared. You know, go visit a fire department, talk to firefighters. You know, ask them if they're willing to talk to you, and I'm sure they will. You know, what is the job? Tell me the pros and cons, because then it gets people, you know, more, you know, it kind of wakes them up. The one thing that shocked me is when we would get officers, and it happened a couple of times, they would go through an FTO program and then realize that it wasn't for them. I'm like, well, why didn't you do more research on the front end?
Right.
You know, I mean, but I think, you correct me if I'm wrong, Jason. I mean, firefighters, I mean, you have natural attrition, people leaving and retiring and things like that, but you still are getting recruits coming in. I mean, law enforcement is too, not like it was before, but I mean, firefighters are still, I think they don't get the rap sometimes as law enforcement. Am I correct? Or what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. That industry of firefighter paramedics, we tend to have a different response protocol, right? So our police brothers and sisters are putting themselves on the line, going in, making sure scenes are safe for us, doing all those things, and sometimes enforcing law. We don't have to enforce a law. So we tend to be liked a little bit better because we're coming in to bandage your wounds or to put out your fire or to go grab a pet that was in distress. So those tend to be a little bit more acceptable, and society tends to gravitate and appreciate a little bit more on that side of it. And therefore, I think people do, we have seen where when we have vacancies and need to hire, we do have more of a draw or pull, which is sad because the other side of the house, without the law enforcement side, then you don't have, you know, the benefits of society and feeling safe and having everything else you need. And so it is one of those, and we like, and I'm sure you heard plenty of times, we go back and forth. We always say, you know what, God created firefighters because police needed a role model, or, you know,
superheroes
but at the end of the day, it's like a right hand, left hand. You
can't, we're all brothers and sisters. We love our firefighters. And so, as we wrap up, Jason, if somebody out there is listening, a firefighter, paramedic, or any first responder, and they're going through some dark times, or going through some problems, whatever the case may be, what advice would you give them, sir?
You're not alone. Mm-hmm. Everyone goes through something, and please don't make a temporary situation that I know seems like there's no way out. It's never going to end. Don't make that temporary moment a permanent solution, because there's so many people that you have no clue that care about you, that you matter to, that just wish they knew that that's what you were dealing with, that they would have just want the extra. There's so many people just wanting to help that sometimes are concerned into how to broker that conversation. So if you're in that moment, if you're listening and you're contemplating a lot of things, don't second guess the words of knowing that you're not alone. You're loved probably more than you know, and don't do something that's going to be permanent. Allow there to be some opportunity to intercede on your behalf.
Well said, and take that step forward. I mean, I know the thing for me, and you know this, Jason, you know, is this, there's that fear of being judged and taking that step forward. And I'm going to tell you, not you, Jason, but the listener, you know, people that are going to judge you for doing what's best for you and getting the help you need, you probably don't need them in your life. The people who are going to support, that's just my opinion, the people who are going to support you and advise you to get help and the treatment you need, those are the people that you want in your camp, you know, not the people that are going to judge you, because you have to be selfish, in my opinion, with your mental health and your physical health. I'm not saying being a narcissist or anything like that. I'm just saying you have to learn how to become selfish with your mental health, especially as a first responder. You have to put yourself first. I know, and you know this, Jason, you know, being a firefighter for many years and still are, is we're so used to helping everybody else. But at some point you start helping yourself, right?
Agreed. Yes.
Yeah. Jason Smith, thank you, sir, so much for taking time out of your busy day. If somebody wants to reach out to you, Jason, find out more about who you work for and what you do. Again, we recapped it at the front. How do they reach out to you, sir?
I'll give them a couple different ways. They can log in the World Wide Web on BC, so Bravo Charlie or Broward County, so the bcfire.com altogether. Or they can email me if they want to email me directly at jsmith@bcfire.com. And I would love to connect if there's anything I can ever do to any of your listeners and obviously yourself. But this is a great opportunity to obviously create awareness that so many others are doing, but what you're doing is amazing. So I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk with you.
Thank you, Jason, so much, sir. Everything we talked about will be in the show notes for the listener out there. Again, sir, anything we can do for you, please don't hesitate to reach out to me.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.